Movie Friday on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, June 1st, the start of new beginnings. And that begins at 11 a.m. today. Leafs, Brad Trey Living, press conference. We'll have it right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, so you can tune in at 11 a.m. We'll be carrying it live. J.D. Bunkus and Blake Murphy will anchor our coverage. We've got a little bit of a different schedule to run through that because Blue Jays baseball at 1 p.m. as well. But tune in at 11. You can hear Brad Trey Living make himself acquainted with the Toronto media, and he seems like a gem. He seems like he's a people person. So we'll see how spicy this press conference gets, because the last time Luke Fox was down at a press conference, I think it surprised many. So we got Luke Fox, Sports NHL writer, on with us today. Luke, what are you expecting from the start of a new era here in Toronto?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think. I guess I'm just curious how much he'll go into detail about what he wants to change, if anything, with the core four, with Sheldon Keefe's uncertain future. There's lots for him to dive into. I mean, he's going to be hitting the ground running here. The Maple Leafs are in a very tricky spot, right? Yes, they won a playoff round, but to get ousted in five games in the second round has drawn the same old questions about the core four and whether it is, you know, the right idea to structure a hockey team this way. So finally we get a new set of eyes on this roster, and it's going to be fascinating to see what changes he wants to make. Are they just to the fringes, or is he going to do some major overhauling here? So experienced guy with a track record of making some blockbuster deals, making some hard decisions, and they're going to come at him fast and furious here.
So, Luke, like us, I'm sure you've been digging feverishly into the record of Brad Trey Living. What have you learned as you've been researching what he did in Calgary, maybe what he did before in Arizona? What stands out to you as you kind of dig into his past?
Feverishly, yeah. I think, like any GM, there's some absolute hits and some misses. I think he's hit on some nice draft picks. Rasmus Anderson has become quite a player, you know, bona fide top four defenseman. He got that pick from Vancouver, trading Sven Barchi and another piece. Like, he has some great trades. I think the one thing that stands out to me is, you know, he works with players to find solutions, and, you know, usually sets his team up to be better in the face of challenges. I mean, the one glaring error, and it's like, how much do you point to the GM or how much do you point to the player, is walking Johnny Gaudreau out the door for free, and, you know, not getting anything in return. And, you know, he signs with Columbus. Trey Living tried desperately to get Gaudreau's signature on a contract last summer, and, you know, he took them right to the brink and then decided to wave goodbye and leave, and he got nothing in return. And you just wonder, that seems like a major event in Trey Living's past, and you wonder how future decisions will be shaped by that as they apply to the Leafs, considering William Nylander and Austin Matthews are only a year away from unrestricted free agency. And, you know, to lose an asset in their prime like that is just horrendous. And then there's smaller moves that I really like. You know, the Dungy Hamilton trades, like, both getting him from Boston, mm-hmm. for a package of picks that amounted basically to nothing, you know, bona fide NHLers, in retrospect, looks like a brilliant move. And then when he realized that Hamilton had to go, he got a nice return for him from Carolina. And, you know, he faced a tricky situation at that same time with Adam Fox, who was, you know, an NCAA guy that had no intention of signing in Calgary. So realizing that it wasn't going to work, and then how do you adjust to that? So he was able to trade him and package him up and get at least something in return for an asset that he knew he wasn't going to be able to keep. And those are the types of experiences that you hope will translate to his tenure here in Toronto.
Yeah, the second Hamilton trade, interesting, because he had success trading the best player in a deal, which might be something the Leafs have to explore this offseason. I get this is a little unfair, so apologies in advance. I'm putting you on the spot. But if you had to assign a letter grade to the 9 years Trey Living spent in Calgary, what would it be?
Oh, probably a B. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's, you know, that's kind of the the funny thing is, of the guys available, once Shanahan put the caveat that he wanted experience, you know, I think he's the best choice of that bunch. Like, I'm more excited by Trey Living coming in here than, say, a Bergevin or a Jason Botterill or a Peter Chiarelli. You know, did Shanahan even try to pry Doug Armstrong out of St. Louis? Like, that would be a signing that would get, I think, the fan base and people around the team pretty excited, right? Because then you're talking about a grade A GM. I think Trey Living's a good one. And I think one of his best assets is how hard he works. You know, there are some GMs that kind of, you know, wait in the weeds and will make calls when they're ready to deal. He's one of these guys that has relationships throughout the league and is constantly on the phone, finding out, you know, who's available, what's going on. He's always poking around. So he's an excellent communicator. Players love him. His bosses love him. The media loves him. Like, he's a very personable guy. So I don't think anything that goes down in the NHL trade-wise will surprise him. I think he has a very good finger on the pulse of the trade buzz or the free agent buzz, all that stuff. So I think to have a guy that is fresh off another team and hasn't been out of the league for a few years, like a Chiarelli or a Mike Gillis or someone, I think is key because of the urgency of the Leafs situation right now.
Yeah, the fact that they didn't big game hunt, do you think that's as much to do about timing as anything? Like, if they had more time, and they may have ended up with Trey Living anyway, but if you think they had more time, would they explore and exhaust the resources and maybe exhaust the conversations that could involve someone like Doug Armstrong? Like, do you think we arrived at this point where they had to make a decision among best available because just the time crunch they were dealing with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a factor. And the other thing is, it gets complicated. I mean, the St. Louis Blues ownership would probably have a say in that. And, you know, Armstrong himself, you know, who knows what his feelings are. I think if he was a free agent, I think the job would absolutely entice him. But, you know, he led that team to its first and only cup. You know, he has strong roots there. So maybe he wasn't even interested. So I think it gets a lot more complicated when you're trying to pry someone out of a contract that they're already in versus someone who doesn't have any ties like Trey Living. And I think even that took a couple days to unravel, because technically he's still under contract or was under contract with the Flames until the end of June. So, and originally they were reluctant to let him interview. So, you know, even that, there was a little bit of complication, but absolutely, I think the Leafs want to get a guy in place as soon as possible so he can start building relationships with Nylander, Matthews, and Marner, you know, make a decision on the head coach, get ready for the draft, get ready for free agency. This is all coming up in a month or less, guys.
We're speaking with Luke Fox of Sportsnet. We will hear from Brad Trey Living at 11 a.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, we're carrying that here. We might hear your voice asking some questions to Brad Trey Living. So don't want to give away your playbook, but is there a question that you hope that he answers honestly at the podium today?
Yeah, there's a bunch. I think one of the first ones is, how does he feel about Sheldon Keefe? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some idea out there. It's kind of funny, like, after that series ended, if you were to tell me that Keith would be safe and Dubas would be the one gone, I think I'd be shocked. I thought Keith was probably the individual in the most danger, and that includes players and front office, just because, you know, he'd lost four out of the five playoff series he'd been in, and you just wonder, that's the easiest change to make, right, is make a change behind the bench, because it's hard to move a bunch of players. But suddenly there's this idea out there that maybe Keith is completely safe. And it's going to be an interesting situation, because either you keep him or you move on from him. But now the list of available coaches is shrinking because, you know, guys are starting to find their seat. The vacancies are starting to fill up. And then if you do keep him, he's entering the final year of his contract. So how much does Trey Living believe in him? Like, has he admired Keith's work from afar? Will Keith's own coaching style change a little bit when he's finally separated from Dubas? You know, those guys work very closely together. So how will that affect? Does he become, you know, a bit of a different coach without Dubas in his ear? Like, it will be fascinating. So I think that decision will be first and foremost. And then how tied is he to structuring a team the way Dubas did in terms of investing so much of your money in four dynamic forwards and then just filling in the fringes? It is simple, like trying to do Dubas 2.0 and try to find those bargain guys and just redraw the cast around those guys, or is he going to make major changes to the core? I don't know if he's going to tip his hand that much in on day one, but it'll be interesting to get his philosophy on the Leafs.
We're not too far removed from the spicy press conference of Brendan Shanahan, where he, I think, surprised many with his honesty, pulling back the curtain about an hour-by-hour timeline of everything that unfolded with Dubas and kind of the inner workings. So does that change how you would prep or, you know, ask questions today, knowing that Brendan Shanahan has kind of given a little bit more than he has previously? I assume he might be up there. He might take questions or he might be present. Nonetheless, you definitely have more of an insight to how a president and a GM has worked previously at MLSE. Would that be something that you'd maybe inquire a bit more with when you talk to Brian Treleaven today?
Yeah, and my understanding is they'll both be there at the press conference. You know, these are usually pretty, I'm sure the tone is going to be much different. You know, it's all going to be a little bit celebratory. You know, we're introducing a new guy. We believe in him. He's our man, that type of thing. He's going to lead us into the future and has his own vision and all these things. The one thing about that dynamic, though, I think it was important that Shanahan still have the power, right? There was a money element. Yes, Dubas coming out publicly and saying, oh, maybe I don't know if I want to be the GM of this team anymore. I mean, those were definitely a factor in how it all fell to pieces there between the two guys. But I think also Dubas wanted a little more say. And, you know, Shanahan, I think, wants to still have the president role. Like he wants to have the final say. And Treleaven has worked under presidents before. He did so in Calgary and had to report up. So I think finding a guy that is comfortable with that structure, I think was key for Shanahan. And Treleaven fits that bill. So, you'd like to think it would be smoother. And the other thing is I don't know exactly how many years. I don't know if it's been put out there in the last few hours, but that Treleaven has. But the interesting thing is I would imagine he signed something around 4 years would be my guess, or at least three. Like, you don't take a job of this magnitude and just sign on for two. So his contract will actually be longer than Shanahan's, who only has 2 years left on his deal. So this is basically Shanahan's last chance to get it right. It's his third GM. So, you know, there's a lot riding on Treleaven's success for Shanahan's own future.
Yeah, we were going to kind of go in through the roles of the general managers that have worked under Brendan Shanahan, and I guess the Coles notes would be, like, he used Nonis to tear down, he used Lou to build a foundation, he used Kyle Dubas to kind of, you know, put all the trimmings and the nice things inside the house, and now we're wondering where that leaves Treleaven. And if not a caretaker, there is a caretaking element to all this, right? Like, if we're led to believe it's true that the core four is safe and maybe Sheldon Keefe is safe, I mean, it's hard to really wonder, or it's easy to wonder, rather, how much of a stamp Treleaven can put on this job. And I feel like that says more about Shanahan maybe than Treleaven, where it's like, you know, Shanahan still believes in this. Shanahan wants to make the decisions. And Shanahan, you know, not that he believed wholeheartedly in what was there. Maybe there were some changes that had to make. But he wants to take on more responsibility, that he's ready to make this his own in, you know, in tandem with Treleaven. Do you think this hire says more or a lot more about Shanahan than maybe we knew before all this stuff went down recently?
Yeah, I think it does tell us something about him. I think Treleaven is, like, probably the safest bet. Like, the easiest choice. It's not risk. Like, going for another young guy, whether it would be just promoting Pridham or going for an Eric Tulski or something, that would be like a bolder, riskier move. I think Treleaven's probably the safer option. Is he going to just be a caretaker? I don't know. I think we're going to have to see it play out. One thing about Treleaven is he was not afraid to make a coaching change. He went through a bunch of coaches in Calgary when he felt like the team wasn't hearing the message or things were sliding off the rails. So whatever the decisions he does or does not make this summer, I think he is a guy willing to adjust on the fly. And let's see how this team looks in the fall. Like, if they get off to a slow start, you have to imagine that whether he gets an extension or not, that Sheldon Keefe, because he has been inherited by Trey Living and wasn't his handpicked guy, that he's going to be at the top of those lists that come out about coaches on the hot seat this season. I mean, if they get off to a slow start, there's no loyalty there anymore. So, you know, and same with the players. He didn't sign those contracts. So I think it's easier for a new guy to make changes on the fly if things aren't going well because he has that card to play. It doesn't have that established loyalty. Like, I'm the one who built this team. I'm the one who hired this coach. I think it's easier for a guy like that to make moves.
You mentioned likely 4 years or a multi-year deal Trey Living's coming over for because that's just how it works.
That's a guess, but yeah.
Yeah, just a guess. But, I mean, yeah, I think it's an educated guess and probably an assumption that is safe to make. Trey Living has some rope, clearly. But if we're looking at and with that rope and with this team, the expectation is to win. And we'll be judging him at the end of all this based on winning. But in the immediate term, maybe 12 months, does success and failure hinge almost exclusively on whether Austin Matthews signs an extension?
Yeah, player-wise, that's the biggest decision. And so I know that Trey Living, even before he's got too far deep into this process, already reached out to Austin Matthews' camp and tried to start building that relationship, finding out where the player's head's at. That is going to be absolutely key. And I think back to when he made it, probably the biggest trade of his life in terms of, you know, Matthew Tkachuk forcing his hand. He could either have kept Tkachuk for one more year and let him walk out for free, or he could get something back for him. So he makes that blockbuster deal with Florida, and he gets two at the time. Jonathan Huberdeau finished fourth in heart voting. Mackenzie Weegar was a bona fide top four defenseman. So to get two, you know, valuable pieces, guys still in their 20s for Tkachuk, yeah, you know, absolutely this year, we know who won that deal. One of them's, you know, starting the Stanley Cup in a couple of nights. But to get two key pieces like that for him, and they both needed contracts. So what he did was he immediately had a long dinner with Huberdeau and was able to get that pending free agent signature on a deal in Calgary long term. And yes, absolutely, Huberdeau did not have a great year. That contract's not looking great right now. I would expect him to bounce back now that, you know, Daryl Sutter's not running things. They didn't mesh well at all. But the GM's job is to get him signed, right? He made a major trade, and one of the reasons why Florida was willing to make that deal was they didn't think they could get him signed. So to bring up to Calgary, you know, it's definitely there's a record of being a little bit more difficult to get guys to commit to, you know, northern teams. So the effort that he went in to develop a personal relationship with Huberdeau and get that deal done relatively swiftly, I think he's going to be in the same boat with Austin Matthews. Get to know him, find out what his number is, try and get him something reasonable and get it done swiftly, because the longer it lingers on, the more questions there are going to be from media. The fan base is going to be a little bit panicky. So that'll be top priority.
Talking to Luke Fox at Sportsnet NHL writer. So there is a Stanley Cup final to be played.
Oh, yeah.
Although the Toronto Maple Leafs world doesn't revolve around that. I'm wondering if you'll be headed to Vegas, to Florida, to Nashville. Do you get to run that gauntlet of great cities over the next month?
I'm doing it all.
Wow. Yeah.
What
a life.
We were wondering if there was someone doing it all. I love it.
Tough one.
Right after the Trey Living press conference, I'm off to the airport and headed to Vegas. Yeah, someone
Vegas
has to do it.
Vegas, so, to Florida. Yeah.
You're
going to
be an entirely
Nashville.
Different person come July 1. Unrecognizable,
I'm
going
to be a shell of myself.
Sounds like you'll have absolutely no fun. If you're willing to switch roles, I'm sure Justin and I could manage taking on that task. But the Cup Final, yeah, puck drops on Saturday night after a pretty lengthy wait, at least for Florida, 8 p.m. there at T-Mobile Arena. Is it the story of Jack Eichel versus Matthew Tkachuk for you?
That's a good one for sure. It might be the story of Sergei Bobrovsky, and the story of you never know with goalies. Just two fascinating situations there, right? One, you pay him $10 million a year. Looks like one of the worst contracts in the NHL. That Bill Zito tried to get rid of that contract, but no one wants it. No one can take it in the cap world. And ever since that Bobrovsky deal, no one has ventured to pay a goaltender that much money. And it pretty much written off, even down the stretch, it was Alex Lyon that carried the load and got the Panthers into the dance. But then as soon as Lyon stumbled, Bobrovsky's gone on this remarkable run, and they're just the hottest team in the league. And his numbers are just mind-boggling. I think if the Panthers are to do it and win one more round, being the underdogs in every single one of them, the Conn Smythe would be a no-brainer. And then on the other side, you got Aiden Hill, who was picked up off the scrap heap from San Jose, third-string goalie, and just getting hot at the right time, both for his team and for him personally. He's an impending UFA. So just kind of this final shows how little we know about goaltending and how quickly it can change and what a hot run can do for a team. But absolutely, the Eichel story is a fantastic one after all those years missing the playoffs in Buffalo. And then Tkachuk has just been so clutch, and just his immediate impact and his personality. You know, he's popping up on NBA on TNT panels, and, you know, he's got great quotes after games, and he's scoring in the last minute every night, it seems. So just two really, really fun teams, southernmost final that we've ever had. And no matter what, we're going to crown a first-time champion and a first championship for a long-serving head coach, whether it's Cassidy or Maurice. So I'm going to be happy for whichever coach gets it too, because those guys are hard workers and have invested their whole lives into this sport. So that's going to be a cool moment for one of them.
All right. Well, lots of intrigue to come, lots for you to cover, and I hope you enjoy your trip. Think of us fondly from afar, waiting here. I mean, it's got nice weather here, but it won't be Vegas, Florida, and Nashville. So enjoy your trip, Luke, and thanks so much for joining us this morning. And have a good press conference day. We've been listening for your voice.
Okay. I'll try to come up with a good one.
It better be good.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks,
right.
Luke. That's Luke Fox, Sportsnet NHL writer, who is headed to the Braintree Living press conference today at 11 a.m. As I mentioned, we'll have it here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy and J.D. Bunkus will help you get through all of that. And our show lineup is a little bit different. The Blue Jays play at 1 p.m. today, so you can catch that, of course, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Kevin Gausman, first pitch today.
So I don't know about you, but as we go through these interviews, we talk more about True Living, we hear more people's opinions, I am feeling better about the hire. Do you feel any better about the hire? Do you feel different about the hire? Is there anything that's changed for you?
Ask me that tomorrow.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think just,
I've been hearing the same thing 100 times. He's the best available guy. He's done some good things. He's done some things that are questionable, which GM doesn't have a track record of something of that.
The thing that I'm clinging to in terms of like being positive is we learn more and more about his realities in Calgary. He left that job.
That's
it
true.
May not have been as easy for him to do what he wanted to do. Maybe he makes that Tkachuk trade, A, because he was forced to buy Matthew Tkachuk, but B, because ownership was like, no, we are trying to win the Stanley Cup next year. You are not making a long-term move. Like, I think a lot of the things may explain some of the actions and some of the negative things. So I'm feeling better about that. But there is one thing I'm stuck on, which is if the mandate does explain his issues as a GM in Calgary, why wouldn't the mandate and the promise, apparently, reportedly from multiple insider sources, that the core four players were safe, why wouldn't that mandate here affect his performance here? That's the only thing that I'm continuing to be stuck on. And if we hear something to address that today, maybe that'll make me feel even better.
Okay, before we bring on the father figure of the show, I want to just quickly touch on three things that I just saw.
That's Jeff Merrick, by the way, the father figure.
The Peaceful Warrior.
Yeah.
I want to bring up three things I just read in Kipper's newest article in the Toronto Star. He just posted it about 30 minutes ago. I took a quick look during the break, and I have three tidbits from Nick Kiprios. First of all, a Keefe extension talk. So this is a quote from Nick Kiprios at the Toronto Star. If Trey Living does want Keefe to return as a head coach of the Leafs, expect a contract extension to come with the announcement to avoid another Kyle Dubas situation. Letting the final year of a contract play out is a difficult task for any coach to command respect from his players who know about his lame duck contract status. So we talked about that in the first hour of the show. And that's a pretty big thing if Sheldon Keefe gets a contract extension to avoid the Kyle Dubas scenario.
It'll be hard for me to be positive about that one.
That would be
difficult.
Because
I think that's an important card that Tre Living can play too. because he plays the card if he extends him. If he waits and things go south right off the bat, then he can do something about it. I don't know if that's the right move.
I don't love that. Here's two more tidbits from Kipper. Quote, don't be surprised to hear veteran defenseman Mark Giordano contemplating retirement. He took some heavy hits during the final stretch of the season, and his health obviously is at the forefront of his decision.
Wouldn't be the first tough decision Treliving would be involved in regarding Mark Giordano.
As I say, former
captain. Left him exposed in the expansion draft.
Final tidbit via Kipper, the Toronto Star. Quote, with Jason Spezza following Dubas out the door, there's been buzz around another ex-NHLer joining the mix in Leafs management. Some have linked Shane Doan as a possibility to the Leafs, considering his ties to Treliving from their days together in the Phoenix, Arizona Coyotes.
New Spezza? Stay tuned.
Everyone likes Shane Doan, too. He's got some Hockey Canada roots, and he's pretty well-respected, fun vibes guy.
Listen,
well,
it doesn't mean someone who is also valuable, i.e. Brendan Pridham, goes out. Like, if it's not an exchange, yeah, I mean, I don't think that would be a bad move to bring in someone Hockey Canada thinks of as someone who can run maybe an Olympic team one day.
Okay. Well, there was some Kipper tidbits from his newest article. You can check that out at the Star.
Kipper's clippings.
That's true. That's a tough one to say. Kipper's clippings. Nonetheless, you can check that out. Okay, let's wrap up our Baby Friday with Chris Cuthbert, play-by-play announcer at NHL on Sportsnet. Your dad. That's next.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the final block on a Baby Friday here on the Fan Morning Show. We hit the Wake and Rake yesterday. We have a little bit of time to send
in
your picks.
Another one here, I think.
At 590, Jays Brewers, 1 p.m. first pitch. Kevin Gausman on the mound. NBA Finals start tonight. Game one. Heat. Nuggets. College dorm room sentences. Heat your Nuggets up. And the Memorial kicking off. We did our golf picks earlier
in the
show.
And the Memorial Cup continues.
And the Memorial Cup. Lots of Memorial moments here. We're getting Chris Cuthbert on the phone. Moments away from hearing the rich timbre of his voice. Christopher John Cuthbert joins us this morning. How are you, sir?
Ailish, good morning. I can't believe that your co-host didn't have my number. That will go down in history.
Yeah, what just
for
happened,
sure.
I can't believe someone who's done immeasurable amount of radio interviews in their career would be giving it to us last second if you want something other than the normal number that I contact you at.
This is the number I use for all my interviews on the Fan Radio. So good to be with you twice in 6 months. So that's overkill, but glad to be with you on this as we get set for the Stanley Cup Final.
Well, you've had so much time off. I mean, we talked ahead of Christmas about how, you know, last year was, you know, got a lot of traveling, a lot of West Coast. There might have been a pothole. There were some dangerous things happening. There were hazards. I mean, you've been just sitting at home, so I thought we'd get you to work.
Rest versus rust. I'm not sure how this is going to play out, but I did get a little comfortable in the last week. I got to tell you, but I'm looking forward to this. I know it's not the back at Christmas, if I said we'd be doing Vegas and the Panthers in the Stanley Cup Final, you guys would have got me off the air right away. But I think there's lots to be interested in, and I'm not going to be Luke Fox. I'm not going to have the Triple Crown. I won't be Secretariat going to Vegas, Florida, and Nashville. But I am looking forward to the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Well, every 6 months, I get to have my favorite show of the week. So, well, let's talk about rest versus rust with you. You're talking about it personally, but what about the Florida Panthers? What about them having to wait 10 days to play a competitive hockey game? Do you think that's going to fare into Saturday night's puck drop in terms of someone with a little bit of an edge and someone that might have a little bit of a sleepy Chris Cuthbert mentality coming into it?
You know, I looked it up because apparently Vegas had that 6 years ago, and or one of the teams was talking about a long layoff before the cup, and they trailed 2-0 after the first period, but won game one 4-2. I think it hurts because I think you'd love to run Bobrovsky off out there as hot as he was as soon as possible with, you know, considering you do want to give him a little bit of rest. But at the same token, that game one, that four overtime, that was a killer. Mm-hmm. And you could sense it affected both teams for the rest of the series. The pace in game one was phenomenal. And I don't know if either team got to the same level because of what they spent in game one of a four overtime game. So I think some of that rest was necessary for Florida to be at their best in the final. But I think there is going to be a little bit of a cost early as well. So, you know, how much did the extra two games take out of Vegas that maybe they didn't need to play when it looked like they were going to sweep? So, you know, all in all, it's, you know, when we get to the end, we might look back and say that was an advantage or a disadvantage or a non-factor.
Yeah, the four overtimes may have affected the rest of the Eastern Conference Final, but it did not affect, at least it seemed, Sergei Bobrovsky, who's authoring one of the great postseason performances we've ever seen. And I wonder, since you've seen a lot of postseasons, where Bobrovsky's performance ranks among the greatest runs that you've covered.
Well, it is up there. I've got a strange one for you. You might be surprised that back a number of years ago, the best goaltending in the playoffs I had seen was for a couple of rounds anyway, Mike Smith, when he beat Chicago as an Arizona Coyote. He was unbelievable for a period of time. But Bobrovsky's done it now deeper. And, you know, I mean, we've seen Marty Brodeur, we've seen Dominic Hasek, and I've heard a lot of people comparing what Bobrovsky's doing to Hasek, and I think there's something to that. Waugh and Brodeur seem to be always consistently great, but this is a level for at least a couple of rounds that's right up there with anybody.
You've called a lot of championship moments in your lifetime, but you get to do something for the very first time. A new winner will hoist the Stanley Cup. Is that an exciting storyline going into it for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's fresh. There's all kinds of storylines. It's a little weird for me that, I mean, I don't know if this has happened before, but I don't think I've seen Vegas all year, and it's very unusual to go through a season. There's usually one or two teams I miss in a year just because of the way the schedule breaks, but I'm playing catch up with the Golden Knights, so you know, I'm excited to see them. I think there's some great storylines. I used to do the Ottawa Senator games, and I got to know Mark Stone and know what he's all about and the passion he brings to the table, and I think there's going to be one of two very interesting captains who get to raise the cup at the end of this, because I think Stone is a guy that wears, you know, his emotions and his passion for the game on his sleeve, and Barkov is one of the probably most underrated excuse me, I kind of think like an Andre Kopitar style player who I think is such a worthy guy to accept the cup as well if he gets that opportunity.
So you get a Saturday night game in Vegas and a Monday night game in Vegas. What does Chris Cuthbert do on his days off in Vegas?
I think a long time ago, pre Justin Cuthbert, I would have enjoyed the in fact, I'll tell you a story. Back in 1986, Don Whitman, the great late Don Whitman, was kind of the leader of our gang, and we were doing a Calgary St. Louis conference final, and Whit loved to gamble, and he could find a casino anywhere, even in places it wasn't legal. But Whit, because there was some time off between games, he kept saying, if it goes to game seven, he said, we can stop off for 5 hours in Vegas between the sixth game in St. Louis and the seventh game in Calgary. And so St. Louis stages a dramatic comeback in Game 6 with, I think, four goals. It's called the Monday Night Miracle, and it was a miracle because Witt's hopes of getting to Vegas came true. And we did have a five-hour stopover in Vegas where the whole crew was there. We had some fun at the tables, and then we flew to Calgary, and this is late May. And we were the last flight to land for about 48 hours because a huge snowstorm hit. And I've always wondered if we were another hour or two later, whether we'd even have gotten to Calgary for Game 7 and I'd still be working on Hockey Night in Canada. So that's the best Vegas story I've got for you.
I know what you're doing because all Cuthberts do the same thing at a casino, which was stand behind the person who's actually gambling away their money.
That's right.
If we're doing... Hey, sorry.
I will say, too, I might go over to the sports book. You guys, because you're Wake and Rakers, did you hear about the Vegas gambler? I guess he's a Golden Knight fan. He put a parlay together of Argentina winning the World Cup, the Denver Nuggets winning the Western Conference of the NBA, and the Golden Knights to win the Cup. And I guess $300 may turn into $75,000 for him.
I'm surprised it's only $75,000.
You better be cooking up a parlay while you're there.
That's pretty good. Well, I'll be listening to the end of this. Get some advice.
Yeah. The world famous Wake and Rake. Since we're doing memory lane, I remember when I was a kid, all of a sudden in 1996, there were little rats in the basement and little things that popped up from a run in 1996 when the last time the Florida Panthers went to the Stanley Cup final. I know you didn't call the Stanley Cup final that year, but I think you were heavily involved in that run. What do you remember about the 96 team, and is there any parallels to the 2023 team?
Well, you know, it was a veteran team of guys that were not expected to go very far. They got great goaltending from John Van Beesbrook, so there's a comparable. But they had all these guys, Scott Mellenby and Tom Fitzgerald, who's now he scored the winning goal to get them to the Stanley Cup final. But they beat the Bruins in round one. They beat Eric Lindros and the Flyers in round two, which nobody expected. And then they beat Mario Lemieux, Jaromir Jagr, and company in the conference final to get to the final. But they had all the... Here's how unexpected heroes develop in the Stanley Cup final. Dave Lowry, until Matthew Tkachuk just beat the record for Florida's most points in a playoff year, Tkachuk broke it in the Carolina series, but Dave Lowry had the most points. He had 10 goals, 17 points. In the regular season, he had 10 goals. And then scored 10 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it was a group of guys that had a lot of character. They had a lot of grit. Brian Skrudland was on that team, won a cup with the Montreal Canadiens, and he was kind of a Sam Bennett style guy. Ed Jovanovski was a horse on the blue line, and so it was a team that probably overachieved, but this team has a lot better chance going into the final than that team in 96.
You won't have John Cooper to lean on for quotes and insight. I think you're the only cup finals you've done have involved John Cooper, unless I'm misremembering one. I mean, he's been at the last three, so that is probably accurate. But you will have two good coaches to lean on in Bruce Cassidy and Paul Maurice. It's probably no coincidence that those two guys are in the position that they're in. How do you think Cassidy and Maurice have transformed their teams as first-year head coaches, caretaking for pretty impressive teams prior to this season?
Well, I think they both probably, and by the way, we should talk about these two guys because, they ran out of answers in their last spot, and I was thinking about this when you're looking at Toronto and what the Leafs are going through now. Fresh set of eyes, and for Paul Maurice, who couldn't find the solution, the Rubik's cube solution in Winnipeg, couldn't get that team over the top, and Bruce Cassidy, who had a lot of success in Boston, but had almost a player revolt by the end, and they go to different places and a clean slate, and suddenly they they put their touches on a on two pretty good teams and end up taking them to the Stanley Cup final. So I think there's a lesson in there for everybody and for both. I think Maurice had to take a President's Trophy team and peel back some of the offense and add a layer of defensive hockey and grit. And I think that's kind of the calling card for Bruce Cassidy, and they've become a very stout defensive team and yet still has plenty of firepower. So I you know, both coaches have done exceptional jobs and both are great quotes. So I'm quite happy about that.
Well, it's an incredible day on our network having Chris Cuthbert at 8:30 and then Brad Trey Living at 11 a.m. in his live press conference. So, I mean, we're pretty blessed today. I want to know your take on Brad Trey Living and the new general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And if you have any history or know him very well or just think he's a guy that might be a good fit here in the city.
Well, as the spokes voice of Boston Pizza, I'm endorsing the move.
Oh yeah, you are. I forgot about
go.
That. I hear your voice all the time.
Not really. I think my connection to Boston Pizza is a lot less than Brad's. He's a tremendous guy. Mm-hmm. He's a good hockey man. He's paid all the dues. He's got great experience. You know, it's the number one job in hockey. And the last time that job was, or I guess when this era of the Leafs started, it was kind of open season and Brendan Shanahan had kind of the pick of the entire hockey world. And this time he's had to make a decision in a very short period of time. And under those circumstances, I think he's come up with the right guy. And again, I go back to Paul Maurice and Bruce Cassidy, different positions, but fresh set of eyes, and you wonder what kind of impact that could make with what he's inheriting, which still, you know, is a pretty interesting group of players and a significant bit of cap room, really, potentially to work with, especially, you know, depending on what he does with Matt Murray's 4.75 or whatever it is part of the contract. If he can free up even more money, he's got something to work with.
He certainly will. We really appreciate you joining us this morning. Safe travels around the United States, and hopefully no ribs are broken or busted this time around, as Justin kind of threw under the bus that one time.
And, yes, he did, and I'll try not to lose much of the inheritance either.
Okay, yeah, be careful. Justin's eyes just lit up. So
don't sit down.
Yeah. All right.
Rub shoulders if you have to.
Thanks for coming on this morning.
Awesome to be with you. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Dad. Chris Cuthbert, play-by-play announcer, Nigel, on Sportsnet. He's waiting to hear the wake and rake, so let's do it.
Wake up!
Now it's time for wake and rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
The winning
thanks,
wake and
Dad.
Rake.
We need the thanks, Dad, as a drop.
The winning wake and rake is back, trying to go two in a row. The NBA finals start tonight. I'm going with Canadian Jamal Murray to get over points tonight. Denver's been waiting around. They're ready to rumble, playing in their first finals game. So let's do it. 25.5 is his points. He's hit the over pretty much almost every game here in the playoffs. He's been playing pretty well. So let's go Murray over points for my selection.
Good Canadian boy. I will go to the Toronto Blue Jays and risk blowing up the parlay early for the matinee. That will be following immediately after the Brad Trilling press conference on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Run line, -1.5, +100.
Gausman.
Kevin Gausman may not get all the run support in the world, but he's your best chance at keeping the run total down for the opposing lineup. I'll bet that he does that and the Blue Jays score enough to make sure this series is a profitable one.
Okay, let's go through our Wake and Rake picks. Good morning. Nice to see you yesterday. Yes, this is Jules and Ron. For today's anchor, I'll take the over strikeouts for Kevin Gausman, and Jules will take the Heat to cover 9.5 points tonight.
Morning, Ailish and Justin. I'm here at Oakdale Golf and Country Club, helping with the deliveries for the Canadian Open. This is Courier Chris from North York. Today he's going with the Heat money line. Wow. And Bianca Andreescu money line. Not sure if that's plus
lots
money,
of heat
Bianca.
Here.
But I feel like it would be. So a couple plus money plays, I'm assuming, from Courier Chris.
I'll double check that. No, she's minus 155 today.
Okay.
Good morning. My afternoon three ball pick for the Memorial is Cantlay over Horschel and Matsuyama. Cantlay, that's my guy, has two top five in his past two visits to Murfield in his last 24 starts at Murfield. He's shot par or better 22 times, a very difficult course. That's good enough for me. Jarrett in Halifax.
So Jarrett from Halifax fading the defending champ, Billy Horschel. Good morning. Corey from Port Hope. Nice win on the Wake and Rake yesterday. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. His pick, Padres money line over the Marlins, minus 115. Should be a solid game, but anytime you get the better team and almost even money, it's worth trying. I tend to agree.
Okay, we just got one quick one here in the text line. Thursday best bets, Wake and Rake Gausman over K's. Milwaukee has the biggest strikeout per nine innings. Blah, 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 blah. I can't read all that, but yes, Gausman over 7.5 strikeouts. That's K-Man and Kitchener. Thanks.
I probably don't have to twist your arm here, but I'm thinking because I want to watch some golf today,
Let's do a little Cantlay action.
Your number one
okay,
pick.
Okay, so it's three ball, though. So,
although you have Matsuyama, too.
That's okay. So just Cantlay, if you can get the three ball. If you can't get the three ball, can you just do Patrick Cantlay to beat whoever he's playing? Three ball's always tough because some
people can't
get it.
What about Miami 9.5? We got two people. Oh. We got two people in the text line saying Miami.
Okay, fine.
You do have Denver. You got a same game parlay it. Your call.
Okay, well, I want to do the Cantlay, but if you can figure it out and you can do a three ball, you can select that yourself. It's okay, just some books don't have it.
Backup plan, Heat.
Okay.
With the points.
Either of those, but let's put the Heat with the points in because it's easiest for people that are learning how to do three ball. Blue Jays run line. Today, Jamal Murray over 25.5 points in the Miami Heat to cover the spread, which is at 9.5. That's plus 627 today. Just a reminder, we'll have a coverage of the Brad Trey Living press conference at 11 a.m. on our station, so stay tuned for that. J.D. Bunkus and Blake Murphy will take you through that. You got Blue Jays baseball at 1 p.m. That's on Sportsnet. Sportsnet Now, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Kevin Gausman versus Freddie Peralta today to kick off their series against the Milwaukee Brewers. To end their series against the Milwaukee Brewers.
What was it? Rabbit, rabbit?
Rabbit, rabbit.
Rabbit, rabbit.
Have a wonderful Baby Friday. Thanks, Dad.